The gates called to him. He glanced over his shoulder. So close now. Still crouching, he began to run again along those twisting streets, wary of those two Shido and any others that might be lurking. The sounds of battle were ahead of him now, coming from north and south, but that did not mean there would be no stragglers. Rounding a corner only a few paces from the wide-open gates, he found them filled with people. Most were garbed in dirty white robes, but three were veiled Algaid Siswai, one of them a hulking fellow who would have dwarfed Lamgwin. That one had Fael's arm in his fist. She looked as if she had been rolled in the dirt. With a roar, Perrin rushed forward, raising his hammer, and the huge man flung Fael back and ran toward him, spear coming up as he plucked his buckler from his belt.
"Perrin!"
Fael screamed. The big Shido seemed to hesitate for a heartbeat, and Perrin took advantage of it. His hammer hit the side of the man's head so hard that his feet left the ground as he fell. Another was right behind him, though, spear ready to stab. Suddenly the man grunted, surprise in the green eyes above his black veil, and dropped to his knees, peering over his shoulder at Fael, who stood close. Slowly he fell forward, revealing a ridged steel hilt rising from his back. Perrin looked hastily for the third and found him also lying on his face, with two wooden knife hilts sticking out of his back. Lucille was leaning against Arella, weeping. No doubt she had found actually killing someone not so easy as she had supposed. Alejandro was at the front of the crowd, too, and Megden right behind her, carried by a tall young man in white, but Perrin had eyes only for Fael. Letting knife and hammer fall, he stepped over the dead men and gathered her in his arms. The smell of her filled his nose. It filled his head. She smelled strongly of charred wood, of all things, but he could still smell her. "I've dreamed of this moment so long," he breathed.
"I have too,"
she said against his chest, hugging him hard. Her scent was full of joy, but she was trembling.
"Did they hurt you?" he asked gently.
No, Perrin, they didn't hurt me."
There were other smells mixed in with her joy, though, laced through it inextricably. The dull, aching scent of sadness and the greasy aroma of guilt. Shame, like thousands of hair-fine needles pricking. Well, the man was dead, and the woman had the right to keep her secrets if she wanted.
"All that matters is that you're alive and we're together again," he told her. "That's all that matters in the world."
"All that matters," she agreed,
hugging him even harder, hard enough that she actually groaned with the effort. But the next instant she had pushed back and was examining his wounds, fingering open tears in his coat to look at them.
"These don't look too bad," she said briskly,
though all of those emotions still lay tangled in her joy. She reached up to part his hair and tugged until he bent his head so she could examine the slash along his scalp.
"You'll need healing, of course. How many Aes Sedai did you bring? How did you—"
"No, that's of no matter right now. There are enough of them to defeat the Shido, and that's what's important."
"This lot of Shido," he said, straightening to look down at her. "Light dirt or no dirt, she was beautiful. There'll be another 6,000 or 7,000 spears here in—" he glanced at the sun. It seemed it should be higher. "Less than 2 hours, maybe. We need to finish up here and be moving before then, if we can.
What's wrong with Megden?" She was limp as a feather pillow against the young man's chest. Her eyelids were fluttering without opening fully.
"She tired herself out saving our lives," Fael said, abandoning his injuries and turning to the other people in white. "Aravine, all of you, start gathering up Gaishine. Not just those sworn to me. Everybody in white. We leave no one we can reach behind. Perrin, what direction is safest?"
"North," he told her. "North is safe."
"Start them moving north," Fael went on. "Gather carts, wagons, pack horses, and load them with whatever you think we'll need. Hurry!"
People started moving, running.
"No, you stay here, Alden. Megden still needs to be carried. You stay too, Alejandra. And Arella. Lucille needs a shoulder to cry on for a while."
Perrin grinned. Put his wife down in the middle of a house engulfed in flames, and she would calmly set about putting the fire out. She would put it out, too. Bending, he cleaned his belt knife on the green-eyed man's coat before sheathing it. His hammer needed a good wiping, too.
He tried not to think about what he was smearing on the man's coat. The fire was fading from his blood. There was no thrill remaining, only tiredness. His wounds were beginning to throb.
"Will you send someone to the fortress to let Ban and Sionad know they can come out now?"
he said as he slipped the hammer's haft back through the loop on his belt. Fael stared at him in amazement.
"They're in the fortress? How? Why?"
"Alice didn't tell you?"
He had always been slow to anger until Fael was taken. Now he felt fury bubbling up in him. Bubbles like white-hot iron.
"She said she was taking you with her when she left, but she promised to tell you to go to the fortress when you saw fog on the ridges and heard wolves howl by daylight. I'd swear she said it straight out. Burn me, you can't trust Aes Sedai an inch."
Fael glanced toward the western ridge where the fog still clung thickly and grimaced.
"Not Alice, Perrin. Galena. If that wasn't a lie, too. It has to be her. And she has to be Black Aja. Oh, how I wish I knew her real name."
She moved her left arm and winced. She had been hurt. Perrin found himself wanting to kill the big Shido all over again. Fael did not let her injury slow her, though.
"Theril, come out from there. I see you peeking around the gate."
A skinny young man edged shyly around the corner of the gate.
"My father told me to stay and keep an eye on you, m'lady," he said in an accent so rough that Perrin could barely understand.
"That's as may be," Fael said firmly. "But you run to the fortress as fast as you can and tell whoever you find there that Lord Perrin says they're to come. Run! Now!"
The boy knuckled his forehead and ran. In a quarter of an hour or so he reappeared, still running, followed by Sionid and Ban and all the others. Ban made a leg to Fael and murmured smoothly how pleased he was to see her again before ordering the Two Rivers men to set up a guard ring around the gate, bows at the ready and halberds stuck in the ground. He used his normal voice for that. He was another who was trying to acquire polish. Salanda and Fael's other hangers-on rushed around her, all babbling with excitement and saying how worried they had been when she failed to appear after the wolves howled.
"I'm going to Masuri," Kirkland announced in tones that dared challenge. He did not wait for one, though, simply drawing his sword and running off along the wall to the north.
Talanvor gave a cry when he saw Megden being held by the tall young man and had to be convinced that she was only exhausted. He still took her away from the fellow and held her against his own chest, whispering to her.
"Where is Chiad?" Gaul demanded.
On learning that she had never been with them, he lifted the veil across his face.
"The maidens tricked me," he said grimly, "but I will find her before them."
Perrin caught his arm.
"There are a lot of men out there who'll take you for a Shido." "I have to find her first, Perrin Ebarra."
There was something in the Aiel's voice, something in his scent that Perrin could only call heartache. He understood the sorrow of thinking the woman you loved might be lost to you forever. He let go of Gull's sleeve, and the man darted through the line of bowmen, spear and buckler in hand.
"I'll go with him," Elias grinned. "Maybe I can keep him out of trouble."
Drawing the long knife that had given him his name among the wolves, Longtooth, he went running after the tall Aielman. If the two of them could not make their way safely out there, then no one could.
"If you are done jabbering, perhaps you will stand still for healing," Sionid told Perrin. "You look as if you need it."
Furin and Terrell were healing her, hands on their sword hilts and eyes trying to watch in every direction. The Ring of Two Rivers men were all very well, their attitude seemed to say, but Sionid's safety was their charge. They looked like leopards healing a house cat. Only she was no house cat.
"See to Fael first," he said. "Her arm is hurt."
Fael was talking with Alejandra, both of them so angry they should have had tails to bristle. No doubt angry over Alice or Galena, or whatever her name was.
"I do not see her bleeding like a stuck pig."
Sion had lifted her hands to cup his head, and that too familiar chill hit him, like suddenly being immersed in a winter pond on the brink of freezing. He gasped and jerked, arms flailing out of his control, and when she released him, his wounds were gone, if not the blood smeared on his face and staining his coat and breeches.
He also felt he could eat a whole deer by himself.
What was that?
The diminutive green turned away from him toward Fayil.
Did you mention Galina Kazban?
I don't know her last name, Fayil said. A round-faced Aes Sedai with a plump mouth and black hair and big eyes. Pretty in a way, but an unpleasant woman. Do you know her? I think she must be Black Aja.
Sayonad stiffened, hands knotting in her skirts.
That sounds like Galina. A red, and decidedly unpleasant. But why would you make such an accusation? It is not a charge to bring against a sister lightly, even against one as disagreeable as Galina.
As Fayil explained, beginning with the first meeting with Galina, Perrin's anger grew again. The woman had blackmailed her, threatened her, lied to her, then tried to murder her. His fists clenched so tight that his arms shook.
"I'll break her neck when I get my hands on it," he growled when she fell silent.
"That is not your right," Sayonad said sharply. "Galina must be tried before three sisters sitting as a court, and for this charge they must be sitters. The entire hall of the tower might sit for it. If she is found guilty, she will be stilled and executed, but justice in this lies with Aes Sedai."
"If," he said incredulously. "You heard what Fayil said? Can you have any doubt?"
He must have looked threatening because Fern and Taro glided in to flank Sionid, their hands resting lightly on sword hilts, their eyes hard on his face.
"She's right, Perrin," Fayil said gently. "When Jack Coplin and Len Conger were accused of stealing a cow, you knew they were thieves, but you made Master Thane prove they had stolen it before you let the village council have them strapped. It's just as important with Galina."
"The village council wouldn't have strapped them without a trial, whatever I'd said," he muttered.
Fayil laughed. She laughed. Light, it was good to hear again.
"Oh, all right. Galina belongs to the Aes Sedai. But if they don't take care of her, I will if I ever find her again. I don't like people hurting you."
Sionid sniffed at him, her scent disapproving.
"Your arm is injured, m'lady?"
"See to Arella first, please," Fayil said. The Aes Sedai rolled her eyes in exasperation and took Fayil's head between her hands. Fayil shivered and exhaled, hardly more than a heavy sigh. Not a bad injury, then, and gone now in any case. She thanked Sionid while leading her to Arella. Suddenly Perrin realized he could not hear the explosions any longer. In fact, he could not recall hearing one for some time. That had to be good. "I need to find out what's happening. Ban, you keep a close guard on Fayil." Fayil protested his going alone, and by the time he finally agreed to take 10 of the Two Rivers men, a rider in lacquered armor had appeared rounding the northern corner of the town wall. 3 thin blue plumes marked her as Ty Lee. As she rode closer, he realized she had a nude woman draped across her tall bay in front of the saddle. A woman bound at ankles and knees, wrists and elbows. Her long golden hair almost brushed the ground, and there were jeweled necklaces and ropes of pearls caught in it. A strand of large green stones and gold slid free and fell to the dirt as Ty Lee reined in. Removing her peculiar helmet with gauntleted hands, she rested it on the woman's upturned bottom.
"A remarkable weapon, those bows of yours," she drawled, eyeing the Two Rivers men. "I wish we had the like. Kirkland told me where to find you, my lord. They've begun surrendering. Massima's men held to the point of suicide. Most of them are dead or dying, I think. And the Damani turned that ridge into a death trap only a madman would walk into. But of all, the Suldam have already fitted Adam to over 200 women. That cold tea of yours was enough that most of them could not stand without help. I'll have to send for Torakan to fly them all out."
Sionid made a sound in her throat. Her face was smooth, but her scent was dagger-sharp fury. She stared at Ty Lee as though trying to stare a hole through her. Ty Lee paid her no mind at all except to shake her head slightly.
"After my people and I are gone," Perrin said. His agreement was with her. He did not want to risk testing it with anyone else.
What are our losses aside from Asima's men?
Light, Tylee replied. Between your archers and the Damani, they never really managed to close with us. I've never seen a battle plan come off so smoothly. If we have 100 dead between us, I'll be surprised.
Perrin winced. He supposed those were light casualties under the circumstances, but some would be Two Rivers men. Whether or not he knew them, they were his responsibility. Do you know where Massima is?
With what's left of his army. He's no coward, I'll say that for him. He and his 200, well, about 100 now, cut a path all the way through the Shido to the ridge.
Perrin ground his teeth. The man was back surrounded by his rabble. It would be his word against Massima's about why Aram had tried to kill him, and in any event, it was unlikely the man's followers would surrender him for trial. We need to start moving before the others get here. If the Shido think rescue is at hand, they might decide to forget they surrendered. Who's your prisoner?
Savanna,
Fael said in a cold voice. The smell of her hatred was nearly as strong as it had been while speaking of Galena. The golden-haired woman twisted herself upward, shaking hair out of her face, and losing several more necklaces in the process. Her eyes, glaring at Fael, were green fire above a strip of cloth that had been tied for a gag. She stank of rage.
Savanna of the Jumai Shido.
Satisfaction was strong in Ty Lee's voice.
She told me so proudly. She's no coward either. Met us wearing nothing but a silk robe and her jewels, but she managed to spear two of my Altarans before I took it away from her.
Savanna snarled through her gag and struggled as if to throw herself from the horse, until Tylee smacked her bottom anyway. After that, she contented herself with glaring at everyone in sight.
She was nicely rounded, though he should not be noticing something like that with his wife there,
except that Elias said she would expect him to notice, so he made himself study her openly.
"I claim the contents of her tent,"
Fael announced, shooting him a sharp look. Maybe he was not supposed to be that open.
"She has a huge chest of jewels in there, and I want them. Don't look at me like a looby, Perrin. We have 100,000 people to feed, clothe, and help get back to their homes. 100,000 at least. I want to come with you, my lady, if you'll have me,"
the young fellow who had been holding Megden piped up.
"I won't be the only one, if you'll have us."
"Your lady wife, I presume, my lord," Tylee said, eyeing Fael.
"She is." "Fael allowed me to present Banner General Tylee Kirgan, in service to the Empress of Shonchan." Perhaps he was acquiring some of that polish himself. "Banner General, my wife, Lady Fael Ni Bashir Tebara." Tylee bowed in her saddle. Fael made a small curtsy, inclined her head slightly. Dirty face or no dirty face, she was regal, which made him think of the broken crown. Discussion of that little matter would have to come later. No doubt it would be a prolonged discussion. He thought he might not find it so hard to raise his voice, the way she apparently wanted this time. "And this is Alejandra Maritha Kigaran, Queen of Gildan, Blessed of the Light, Defender of Garan's Wall, and my liegewoman. Gildan is under my protection." Fool thing to say, but it had to be said.
"Our agreement doesn't speak to that, my lord," Tylee said carefully. "I don't decide where the ever-victorious army goes."
"Just so you know, Banner General, and tell those above you they can't have Gildan." Alejandra smiled at him so widely, so gratefully, he almost wanted to laugh. Light Fael was smiling too, a proud smile. He rubbed the side of his nose. "We really do need to begin moving before those other Shido arrive. I don't want to find myself with them in front of me and all those prisoners behind me thinking about picking up a spear again." Tylee chuckled.
"I have a little more experience with these people than you, my lord.
Once they surrender, they won't fight again or try to escape for 3 days. Besides, I have some of my Altarans making bonfires out of their spears and bows just to make sure. We have time to make our deployments. My lord, I hope I never have to face you in the field, she said, pulling the steel-backed gauntlet from her right hand. I would be honored if you'd call me Ty Lee.
She bent over Savannah to offer her hand. For a moment, Perrin could only stare. It was a strange world. He had gone to her thinking he was making a deal with the Dark One, and the Light knew some of what the Shan Chan did was beyond repugnant. But the woman was stalwart and true to her word.
I'm Perrin, Ty Lee, he said, clasping her hand. A very strange world.
Stripping off her shift, Galena tossed it down atop the silk robe and bent to pick up the riding dress she had pulled from Swift's saddlebags. The thing had been sewn for a slightly larger woman, but it would suffice until she could sell one of those fire drops.
"Stand as you are, Lena," came Tharava's voice, and suddenly Galena could not have straightened if the forest around her had been on fire. She could scream, though. "Be silent." She choked as her throat swallowed the scream convulsively. She could still weep, silently, and tears began to fall on the mulch of the forest floor. A hand slapped her rudely. "Somehow you have the rod," Tharava said. "You would not be out here else. Give it to me, Lena." There was no question even of resisting. Straightening, Galena dug the rod out of her saddlebags and handed it to the hawk-eyed woman, tears sliding down her cheeks. "Stop sniveling, Lena, and put on your necklace and collar. I will have to punish you for taking them off." Galena flinched. Even Tharava's command could not shut off her tears, and she knew she would be punished for that, too. Golden necklace and collar came out of the saddlebags and went on to her. She stood there wearing only her pale woolen stockings and soft white laced boots, and the weight of the fire-drop-studded collar and belt seemed enough to bear her to the ground. Her eyes fastened themselves to the white rod in Tharava's hands. "Your horse will do for a pack animal, Lena. As for you, you are forbidden to ride ever again."
There had to be some way to get that rod again. There had to be. Tharava turned the thing over and over in her hands, taunting her.
"Stop playing with your pet, Tharava. What are we going to do?"
Belinda, a slender wise one with hair bleached almost white by the sun, strode up to glare at Tharava with pale blue eyes. She was bony, with a face well suited to glaring. That was the first Galena realized that Tharava was not alone. Several hundred men, women, and children stood among the trees behind them, some of the men carrying women slung over their shoulders, of all things. She covered herself with her hands, her face heating. Those long days of enforced nakedness had not inured her to being unclothed in front of men. Then she noticed another oddity. Only a handful were Algaida Siswai, with bow cases on their backs and quivers at their hips. But every man and every woman except the wise ones among them was carrying at least one spear. They had their faces veiled, too, with a scarf or just a scrap of cloth. What could it mean?
"We are returning to the Threefold Land," Tharava said. "We will send runners to find every sept that can be found and tell them to abandon their wetlander Gaishine, abandon everything they must, and make their way by stealth back to the Threefold Land. We will rebuild our clan. The Shido will rise from the disaster Savannah led us to."
"That will take generations," Modara protested. Slim and quite pretty, but even taller than Tharava, as tall as most Aiel men, she stood up to Tharava unflinchingly. Galena could not understand how she did that. The woman made her flinch with a glance.
"Then we will take generations," Tharava said firmly. "We will take whatever time is necessary, and we will never leave the Threefold Land again."
Her gaze shifted to Galena, who flinched.
"You will never touch this again," she said, raising the rod briefly. "And you will never try to escape me again. She has a strong back. Load her, and let us be on our way." They may try to pursue us. Burdened with water skins and pots and kettles, till she almost felt decently covered, Galina staggered through the forest at Tharava's heels. She did not think of the rod or escape. Something had broken in her. She was Galina Kazban, highest of the Red Aja, who sat on the Supreme Council of the Black Aja, and she was going to be Tharava's plaything for the rest of her life. She was Tharava's little Lena. For the rest of her life. She knew that to her bones. Tears rolled silently down her face. Chapter 31. The House on Full Moon Street. They must stay together, Elaine said firmly. The two of you shouldn't be out by yourselves, for that matter. Always three or four together, anywhere in Camelin. That's the only way to be safe. Just two of the mirrored stand lamps were lit, six flames filling the sitting room with a dim light and the scent of lilies. So much of the lamp oil had gone bad that it was always perfumed now. But a crackling fire on the hearth was beginning to take away some of the early hour's coolness.
There are times a woman wants a little privacy, Sumiko replied calmly, as if yet another kinswoman had not just died from wanting privacy. Her voice was calm, at least, but a plump hand smoothed her dark blue skirts. "If you won't put the fear of the light into them, Sumiko, I will," Elise said, her usually mild face stern. She looked the elder of the two, with touches of grey in her hair, compared to the glossy black hair that fell below Sumiko's stout shoulders. Yet she was the younger by better than 200 years. Elise had been intrepid when Ebudar fell and they were forced to flee the Shanshan, but her hands moved on her brown skirts, too. It was long past the bedtime that Asanda's niece Melfane had decreed, but tired as she was all the time, once Elaine woke, she could never get back to sleep. And warm goat's milk did not help. Warm goat's milk tasted worse than cool. She was going to make Rand Bloody Althor drink warm bloody goat's milk till it came out of his ears. Right after she found out what had hurt him badly enough, that she sensed a small jolt of pain, while everything else in that small knot in the back of her head that was him remained as vague as a stone. It had been all a stone again ever since, so he was all right, yet something had hurt him deeply for her to sense anything at all. And why was he traveling so often? One day he was far to the southeast, the next to the northwest and even more distant, the day after that somewhere else. Was he running from whoever had hurt him? But she had her own worries at the moment. Unable to sleep, and restless, she had dressed herself in the first thing that came to hand, a dark grey riding dress, and gone for a walk to enjoy the stillness of the palace in the small hours of the morning, when even the servants were abed and flickering stand lamps were the only things that moved in the hallways aside from her. Her and her bodyguards, but she was learning to ignore their presence. She did enjoy the solitude, until the two women encountered her and delivered the sad news that would have awaited sunrise otherwise. She had brought them back to her smaller sitting room to discuss the matter behind a ward against listeners. Sumiko shifted her bulk in her armchair to glare at Elise. Rihanna lets you press boundaries, but as eldest, I expect—
You're not eldest, Sumiko, the smaller woman said coolly. You have the authority here, but by the rule, the knitting circle consists of the 13 eldest of us in Ebudar. We aren't in Ebudar any longer, so there is no knitting circle.
Sumiko's round face grew hard as granite. At least you admit I have the authority. And I expect you to use it to prevent any more of us being murdered. Suggesting isn't enough, Sumiko. No matter how strongly you say you suggest, it isn't enough.
"Arguing will get us nowhere," Elaine said. "I know you're on edge. I am, too. Light, three women murdered with the One Power in the last 10 days, and very likely 7 more before that, were enough to put an anvil on edge. But snapping at each other is the worst thing we can do. Sumiko, you need to put your foot down. I don't care how much anyone wants privacy, no one can be by herself for a minute. Elise, use your persuasion."
Persuasion was not exactly the word. Elise did not persuade. She simply expected people to do as she said, and they nearly always did.
Convince the others that Sumiko is right.
Between the two of you, you have to... The door opened to admit Denny, who closed it again behind her and bowed, one hand on her sword hilt, the other on her long cudgel. The red lacquered breastplates and helmets, trimmed in white, had been delivered only yesterday, and the stocky woman had been smiling ever since she donned hers, but she looked solemn behind the face bars now. "Pardon for interrupting, my lady, but there's an Aes Sedai here demanding to see you, a red by her shawl. I told her you were likely sleeping, but she was ready to come in and wake you herself." A red. There were reports of reds in the city from time to time, though not so often as once. Most Aes Sedai in the city went without their shawls, concealing their ajahs. Yet what would a red want with her? Surely they all knew by now that she stood with Egwene and against Elida, unless someone was finally trying to bring her to book for the bargain with the sea folk. "Tell her that I'm..." The door opened again, bumping Denny's back, pushing her out of the way. The woman who entered, vine-woven shawl draped along her arms so the long red fringe displayed itself to advantage, was tall and slim and copper-skinned. She would have been pretty, except that her mouth was compressed until her full lips seemed thin. Her riding dress was so dark it might have been black, but the pale light of the stand mirrors picked up hints of red, and the divided skirts were slashed with brighter red. Juhara Basaheen never made any secret of her Aja. Once Sumiko and Elise would have been on their feet and curtsying for an Aes Sedai in a flash, but now they remained seated, studying her. Denny, normally placid, in appearance at least, scowled and fingered her cudgel. "I see the tales of you gathering wilders are true," Juhara said. "A great pity, that. The two of you get out. I wish to speak with Elaine privately. If you're wise, you will leave tonight, heading in different directions, and tell any others like you to do the same. The White Tower looks amiss on wilders gathering together. When the tower looks on something amiss, thrones have been known to tremble." Neither Sumiko nor Elise moved. Elise actually arched an eyebrow. "They can stay," Elaine said coldly. With the power in her, her emotions were not bouncing. They were steady in an icy anger. "They are welcome here. You, on the other hand. Elida tried to have me kidnapped, Juhara. Kidnapped! You can leave. A poor welcome, Elaine, when I came to the palace as soon as I arrived, and after a journey that would be as torturous to describe as it was to endure. Andor has always had good relations with the Tower. The Tower intends to see they remain good. Are you sure you want these wilders to hear everything I have to say to you? Very well, if you insist." Gliding to one of the carved sideboards, she wrinkled her nose at the silver pitcher holding goat's milk and poured herself a cup of dark wine before taking a chair across from Elaine. Denny made a move as if to try dragging her out, but Elaine shook her head. The Damani sister ignored the kinswomen as if they had ceased to exist. "The woman who drugged you has been punished, Elaine. She was flogged in front of her own shop with everyone in her village watching." Juhara sipped her wine, waiting for Elaine to respond. She said nothing. She knew very well that Rhonda Makura had been flogged for failure rather than for feeding her that vile tea, but saying so would make Juhara wonder how she knew, and that might lead to things that needed to remain hidden. The silence stretched, and finally the other woman went on. "You must know that the White Tower wants very much for you to mount the Lion Throne. To achieve that end, Elida has sent me to be your advisor." In spite of herself, Elaine laughed. Elida had sent her an advisor? It was ludicrous. "I have Aes Sedai to advise me when I need advice, Juhara. You must know I oppose Elida. I wouldn't accept a pair of stockings from that woman." "Your so-called advisors are rebels, child," Juhara said chidingly, with a heavy dose of distaste on the word rebels. She gestured with the silver wine cup. "Why do you think you have so many houses opposing you, so many standing aside? They surely know you don't really have the backing of the tower. With me as your advisor, that changes. I might be able to put the crown on your head inside a week. At most, it should take no more than a month or two." Elaine met the other woman's gaze with a level gaze of her own. Her hands wanted to make fists, but she kept them still in her lap. "Even were that so,
I'd refuse you. I expect to hear any day that Elida has been deposed. The White Tower will be whole again, and no one will be able to claim I lack its backing then. Juhara studied her wine for a moment, her face a mask of Aes Sedai's serenity. It won't be entirely smooth going for you, she said, as if Elaine had not spoken. This is the part I thought you wouldn't want the Wilders to hear, and that guard. Does she think I'm going to attack you? No matter. Once you have the crown firmly on your head, you will have to appoint a regent, because you must return to the tower then to complete your training and eventually be tested for the shawl. You need have no fear of being birched as a runaway. Elida accepts that Swan Sanche ordered you to leave the tower. Your pretense of being Aes Sedai is another matter. That you will pay for with tears. Sumiko and Elise stirred, and Juhara took notice of them again. Ah, you didn't know that Elaine is really only one of the accepted? Elaine rose and stared down at Juhara. Usually someone seated held the advantage over someone standing, but she made her stare hard and her voice harder. She wanted to slap the woman's face. I was raised Aes Sedai by Egwene Alvear on the day she herself was raised Amyrlin. I chose the Green Aja and was admitted. Don't you ever say I'm not Aes Sedai, Juhara. Burn me if I'll stand still for it. Juhara's mouth pinched down till her lips seemed a gash. Think, and you will see the reality of your situation, she said finally. Think hard, Elaine. A blind woman could see how much you need me and the White Tower's blessing. We will talk again later. Have someone show me to my rooms. I am more than ready for my bed. You'll have to find a room at an inn, Juhara. Every bed in the palace already has 3 or 4 people sleeping in it. If dozens of beds had been free, she would not have offered Juhara one. Turning her back, she walked to the fireplace and stood warming her hands. The gilded pendulum clock on the scroll-carved marble mantel chimed 3 times. Perhaps as many hours remained till sunrise. Denny, have someone escort Juhara to the gates. You won't fend me off so easily, child. No one fends off the White Tower easily. Think, and you'll see I'm your only hope. Silk whisked against silk as she left the room, and the door clicked shut behind her. It seemed very possible Juhara would cause trouble trying to make herself needed, but one problem at a time. Did she put doubts in your minds? Elaine said, turning from the fire. None, Sumiko replied. Van Deen and the other 2 accept you as Aes Sedai, so you must be. Conviction was strong in her voice, but then she had reason to want to believe. If Elaine were a liar, her dreams of returning to the tower, of joining the Yellow Aja, died. But this Juhara believes she was speaking the truth. Elise spread her hands. I'm not saying I doubt you. I don't. But the woman believes. Elaine sighed. The situation is complicated. That was like saying water was moist. I am Aes Sedai, but Juhara doesn't believe. She can't, because that would be admitting Egwene Alvear truly is the Amyrlin seat. And Juhara won't do that until Elida has been brought down. She hoped Juhara would believe then. Accept, at least. The tower had to be made whole. Sumiko, you will order the kinswoman to stay in groups, always? The stout woman muttered that she would. Unlike Rihanna, Sumiko had no flair for leadership, or liking for it either. A pity no older kinswoman had appeared to take the burden from her. Elise, you'll make sure they obey? Elise's agreement was firm and quick. She would have been the perfect candidate if the kin did not determine their rankings by age. Then we've done what we can. It's long past time you were in your beds. Long past time for you, too, Elise said as she stood. I could send for Melfane. No need to rob her of sleep, too, Elaine said hastily, and firmly. Melfane was short and stout, a merry woman with a ready laugh, and unlike her aunt in other ways as well. Merry or not, the midwife was a tyrant who would not be pleased to learn that she was awake. I'll sleep when I can. Once they left, she released Sidar and took up a book from several on the second sideboard, Yet another history of Andor, but she could not concentrate. Bereft of the power, she felt grumpy. Burn her, she was so weary that her eyes felt grainy. She knew that if she lay down, though, she would stare at the ceiling till the sun rose. In any case, she had stared at the page for only minutes when Denny appeared again. "Master Nori is here, my lady, with that Hark fellow. Said he'd heard you were up and wondered if you could spare him a few minutes." He had heard she was up? If he was having her watched? The import broke through her grumpiness. Hark. He had not brought Hark since that first visit 10 days ago. No, 11 days now. Ebullience replaced peevishness. Telling Denny to send them in, she followed the woman as far as the anteroom, where a patterned carpet covered most of the red and white floor tiles. Here, too, only a pair of stand lamps were lit, giving off a dim, wavering light and a scent of roses. Master Nori looked more than ever a white-crested wading bird with his long, spindly shanks and tufts of hair sticking up behind his ears, but for once he almost seemed excited. He was actually rubbing his hands together. He was not carrying his leather folder tonight. Even in the dim light, the ink stains on his crimson tabard showed. One had turned the tuft of the white lion's tail black. He offered a stiff bow, and the nondescript Hark imitated him awkwardly, then knuckled his forehead for good measure. He was wearing a darker brown than he had previously, but the same belt and buckle. "Forgive the hour, my lady," Nori began in that dry voice. "How did you know I was awake?" she demanded, emotions bouncing again. Nori blinked, startled by the question. "One of the cooks mentioned sending up warm goat's milk for you when I went to get some for myself, my lady. I find warm goat's milk very soothing when I can't sleep. But she mentioned wine, too, so I assumed you had visitors and might still be awake." Elaine sniffed. She still wanted to snap at someone. Keeping that out of her voice required an effort. "I suppose you've success to report, Master Hark?"
"I followed him, like you said, my lady, and he's been to the same house 3 nights, counting this one. It's on Full Moon Street in the new city, it is. Only place he ever goes, except taverns and common rooms. He drinks some, he does. Dices a lot, too."
The man hesitated, dry washing his hands nervously.
"I can go now, right, my lady? You'll take off whatever it was you put on me?"
"According to the tax rolls," Nori said, "the house is owned by the Lady Cheyenne Avarhin, my lady. She seems to be the last of the house." "What else can you tell me about the place, Master Hark? Who else lives there besides this Lady Cheyenne?"
Hark rubbed his nose uneasily.
"Well, I don't know as they lives there, my lady, but there's 2 Aes Sedai there tonight. I saw one of them letting Melar out while the other was coming in. And the one who's coming in said, 'A pity there are only 2 of us, Phelion, the way Lady Cheyenne works us.' Only she said lady like she didn't mean it, she did. Funny. She was carrying a stray cat, a thing scrawny as she was."
He bobbed a sudden nervous bow.
"Begging your pardon, my lady. Didn't mean no offence, speaking of an Aes Sedai that way, but it took me a minute to realise she was Aes Sedai, it did. There was good light from the entry hall, there was, but she was so thin and plain with a wide nose that nobody would take her for Aes Sedai without some study."
Elaine laid a hand on his arm. Excitement bubbled in her voice, and she let it. "What were their accents?"
"Their accents, my lady? Well, the one with the cat, she's from right here in Camelin, I'd say. The other, well, she didn't say above 2 sentences, but I'd say she was Kandori. Called the other Marilyn, if that helps, my lady."
Laughing, Elaine capered a few steps. She knew who had set Melar on her now, and it was worse than she had feared. Marilyn Gamalfin and Phelion Boda. 2 black sisters who had fled the tower after doing murder. That had been to facilitate theft, but it was the murders that would see them stilled and beheaded. It had been to find them and the others with them that she, Egwene, and Nynaeve had been sent out of the tower. The Black Aja had planted Melar next to her, to spy, most likely, but still a chilling thought. Worse than she had feared, and yet finding the 2 now was like completing the circle. Hark was staring at her with his mouth hanging open, she realized. Master Nori was studiously examining the lion's stained tail. She stopped dancing and folded her hands. Fool men. Where is Melar now?
In his rooms, I believe, Nori said.
My lady, you'll take it off now, Hark said, and I can go. I did what you asked.
First you have to lead us to this house, she said, darting past him to the twinned doors. Then we'll talk. Putting her head out into the corridor, she found Denny and 7 more guardswomen lined up on either side of the doors.
Denny, send someone to fetch the Lady Birgitta as fast as possible, and someone else to wake the Aes Sedai and ask them to come too, with their warders, and prepare to take a ride. Then you go and wake however many guardswomen you think you need to arrest Melar. You needn't be too gentle about it. The charges are murder and being a dark friend. Lock him in one of the basement storerooms with a strong guard.
The stocky woman smiled broadly and began giving orders as Elaine went back inside.
Hark was wringing his hands and shifting from one foot to the other anxiously.
My lady, what do you mean, we'll talk? You promised to take this thing off me if I followed the man you did, and I did, so you have to keep your word.
I never said I'd remove the finder, Master Hark. I said you'd be exiled to Berlon instead of hanging, but wouldn't you rather remain in Camelin?
The man widened his eyes, trying to look sincere, and failing. He even smiled.
Oh, no, my lady. I've been dreaming about the fresh country air in Berlon I has. I'll wager there's never a worry about getting rotten meat in your stew there. Here, you got to sniff careful before you eat anything. I'm looking forward to it, I am.
Elaine put on the stern face her mother had always worn, passing judgment. You'd be out of Berlon 2 minutes behind the guardsman who escorted you there, and then you'd hang for breaking your exile. Much better for you to remain in Camelin and take on a new line of work. Master Nori, could you use a man with Hark's talents?
I could, my lady, Nori replied, without even a pause for thought.
A satisfied smile touched his thin lips, and Elaine realized what she had done. She had given him a tool to encroach on Mistress Harfor's ground, but there was no undoing it now.
The work won't be so remunerative as your former trade, Master Hark, but you won't hang for it.
Not so what, my lady? Hark said, scratching his head.
It won't pay so well. What do you say? Berlon, where you'll surely cut a purse or bolt and hang for either one? Or Camelin, where you'll have steady work and no fear of the hangman, unless you take up cutting purses again.
Hark swayed on his feet, scrubbing the back of his hand across his mouth.
I needs a drink, I does, he muttered hoarsely. Very likely he believed the finder would allow her to know if he cut a purse.
If so, she had no intention of disabusing him.
Master Nori scowled at the man, but when he opened his mouth, she said,
There's wine in the small sitting room. Let him have one cup, then join me in the large sitting room.
The large sitting room was dark when she walked in, but she channeled to light the mirrored stand lamps against the dark paneled walls and the kindling of the fires neatly laid on the facing hearths. Then she took a seat in one of the low-backed chairs around the scroll-edged table and released Sidar again. Since her experiment at holding the power all day, she had not held it longer than necessary. Her mood swung from joyful excitement to morose worry and back. On the one hand, she was done with having to put up with Melar, and soon she would have her hands on 2 black sisters. Questioning them might lead to the rest, or at least reveal their plans. And if not, this Cheyenne would have her own secrets. Anyone who was working 2 dark friend sisters would have secrets worth knowing. On the other hand, what would Duhara do to try forcing her acceptance as an advisor? Duhara would try to meddle somehow, but she could not see how. Burn her? She did not need any more difficulties between her and the throne. With a little luck, tonight would not only snare 2 black sisters, it might uncover a 3rd, a murderer 10 times over. Back and forth she went, from Phalion and Marilyn to Duhara, even after Master Nori and Hark joined her. Hark, a silver cup in his hand, tried to take a seat at the table, but Master Nori tapped him on the shoulder and jerked his head toward a corner. Sullenly, Hark went where he was directed. He must have begun drinking as soon as the cup was filled, because he emptied it in 1 long pull, then stood turning it over in his hands and staring at it. Suddenly, he gave a start and directed an ingratiating grin at her. Whatever he saw in her face made him flinch.
Scuttling to the long table against the wall, he set the cup down with exaggerated care, then scuttled back to his corner. Birgitta was the first to arrive, the bond filled with weary discontent. "A ride?" she said, and when Elaine explained, she began raising objections. Well, some of it was objections. The rest was just insults. "What hare-brained, crack-pated scheme are you talking about, Birgitta?" Van Deen said as she entered the room. She wore a riding dress that hung loose on her. One of her sisters, it would have fit her perfectly while Adelius was alive, but the white-haired woman had lost weight. Her jame, wiry and gnarled, took one look at Hark and placed himself where he could watch the man. Hark ventured a smile, but it faded when James' expression remained hard as iron. The warder's graying hair was thin, but there was nothing soft about him. "She intends to try capturing two black sisters tonight," Birgitta replied, shooting a hard look at Elaine. "Two black sisters?" Saritha exclaimed, walking through the door. She gathered her dark cloak around her as though the words had given a chill. "Who?" Her warder Ned, a tall, broad-shouldered young man with yellow hair, eyed Hark and touched his sword hilt. He chose a spot where he could watch the man, too. Hark shifted his feet. He might have been thinking of trying to run. "Phelan Boda and Marilyn Gamalfin," Elaine said. Saritha's mouth hardened. "What about Phelan and Marilyn?" Cariana asked as she glided into the room. Her warders were disparate men, a tall, gangly Tyran, a blade-slender Saldaean, and a broad-shouldered Kyrianan. They exchanged glances, and Taven, the Kyrianan, leaned against the wall watching Hark, while Sierral and Venner stood in the doorway. Hark's mouth took on a sickly twist. There was nothing for it but to explain again from the beginning, which Elaine did with a rising impatience that had nothing to do with her shifting moods. The longer this took, the more chance that Phelan and Marilyn might be gone by the time she reached the house on Full Moon Street. She wanted them. She intended to have them. She should have made Birgitta wait until everyone had gathered. "A good plan, I think," Van Deen said when she finished. "Yes, it will do nicely." Others were not so agreeable. "It isn't a plan, it's bloody madness," Birgitta said sharply. Arms folded beneath her bosom, she scowled down at Elaine, the bond such a turmoil of emotions that Elaine could barely make them out. "The four of you enter the house alone." "Alone? That isn't a plan. It's flaming insanity. Warders are supposed to guard their Aes Sedai's backs. Let us come with you." The other warders put in emphatic agreements, but at least she was not trying to stop the whole thing anymore. "There are four of us," Elaine told her. "We can watch our own backs. And sisters do not ask their warders to face other sisters." Birgitta's face darkened. "If I need you, I'll shout so loud you'll be able to hear me if you were back here in the palace. The warders remain outside," she added when Birgitta opened her mouth. The bond filled with frustration, but Birgitta's jaw snapped shut. "Perhaps this man can be trusted," Saritha said, glancing at Hark with no trust at all. "But even if he heard correctly, nothing says there are still only two sisters in the house, or any. If they have gone, there's no danger, but if others have joined them, we might as well put our necks in a noose and spring the trap ourselves." Kariana folded her sturdy arms and nodded. "The danger is too great. You yourself told us that when they fled the tower, they stole a number of Turangrial, some very dangerous indeed. I've never been called a coward, but I don't fancy trying to sneak up on someone who might have a rod that can make balefire." "He could hardly have misheard something as simple as, 'There are only two of us,'" Elaine replied firmly. "And they spoke as if they didn't expect any others. Burn her? Considering her standing with respect to them, they should have been jumping to obey rather than arguing. In any case, this isn't a discussion." "A pity both objected. If only one had, it could have been a clue. Unless they both were Black Aja." A bone-freezing thought, that. Yet her plan took the possibility into account. "Phelan and Marilyn won't know we are coming until it's too late. If they're gone, we'll arrest this Cheyenne, but we are going." It was a larger party than Elaine had expected that rode out of the Queen's stable-yard behind her and Hark. Birgitta had insisted on bringing 50 guardswomen, though all they would be doing was missing sleep, a column of twos in red lacquered helmets and breastplates, black in the night, that snaked along the palace behind the Aes Sedai and warders. Reaching the front of the palace, they skirted the edge of the Queen's Plaza, the great oval crowded now with rude shelters that housed sleeping guardsmen and nobles' armsmen. Men were billeted everywhere room could be found, but there were insufficient basements and attics and spare rooms near enough the palace, and the parks where circles of kinswomen would take the men to the places where they were needed. The fighting they did was afoot, on the walls, so their horses were all picketed in nearby parks and in the larger palace gardens. A few sentries shifted as they passed, heads swiveling to follow, but with her hood up, all they could be sure of was that a large contingent of guardswomen were escorting a party through the night. The sky to the east was still dark, but it must be less than 2 hours till first light. The light send dawn would see Phelion and Marilyn in custody. And one more. At least one more. Winding streets led over and around the hills past narrow, tile-covered towers that would glitter with 100 colors when the sun rose and glittered faintly in the cloud-dappled moonlight. Past silent shops and lightless inns, simple stone houses with slate roofs, and small palaces that might have fit in Tar Valon. The ring of horseshoes on the paving stones and the faint creak of saddle leather sounded loud in the silence. Except for an occasional dog that slunk away into the deeper shadows of alleys, nothing else moved. The streets were dangerous at this hour, but no footpad would be mad enough to come in sight of so large a party. Half an hour after leaving the royal palace, Elaine rode Fireheart through the Mondel Gate, a wide 20-foot-high arch in the inner city's tall white wall. Once there would have been guardsmen on duty there to keep the peace, but the Queen's guards were spread too thin now for that. Almost as soon as they were into the new city, Hark turned east into a warren of streets that meandered in every direction through the city's hills. He rode awkwardly on a bay mare that had been found for him. Cut purses seldom spent time in the saddle. Some of the streets were quite narrow here, and it was in one of those that he finally drew rein, surrounded by stone houses of two or three or even four stories. Birgitta raised a hand to halt the column. The sudden silence seemed deafening.
"It's just around that corner there it is, my lady, the other side of the street," Hark said in a near whisper. "But if we go riding out there, they might hear us or see us. Pardon, my lady, but if these Aes Sedai are what you says they are, I don't want them seeing me."
He scrambled down from his saddle clumsily and looked up at her, wringing his hands, his moon-shadowed face anxious. Dismounting, Elaine led Fireheart to the corner and peeked around the corner of a narrow, three-story house. The houses along the other street stood dark except for one, four substantial stories of stone, with the closed gate of a stable-yard beside it. Not an ornate building, but large enough for a wealthy merchant or banker. Bankers and merchants were unlikely to be awake at this hour, however.
"There,"
Hark whispered hoarsely, pointing. He stood far back, so he had to lean forward to point. He really did fear being seen.
"The one with the light on the second floor, it is."
"Best to find out if anyone else is awake in there," Van Deen said, peering past Elaine. "Jame, don't go inside the house." Elaine expected the lean old warder to sneak across the street, but he just strolled out, holding his cloak close around him against the early morning chill. Even the dangerous grace of a warder appeared to have deserted him. Van Deen seemed to sense her surprise. "Skulking draws the eye and creates suspicion," she said. "Jame is just a man walking, and if it's early to be out in the streets, he isn't sneaking, so anyone who sees him will think of some mundane reason for him to be out." Reaching the stable-yard gate, Jame pulled it open and walked through as if he had a perfect right. Long minutes passed before he came back out, shutting the gate carefully behind him, and strolled back along the street. He rounded the corner and the leopard-like grace reappeared in his step.
"All the windows are dark except that one," he told Van Deen quietly. "The kitchen door is unlatched, so is the back door. That lets on to an alley. Trusting for dark friends, or else dangerous enough they don't worry about burglars. There's a big fellow sleeping in the barn up in the loft. Big enough to scare any burglar, but he's so drunk he didn't wake while I was tying him up."
Van Deen raised a questioning eyebrow.
"I thought I'd better be safe. Drunks sometimes wake when you least expect. You wouldn't want him seeing you go in and start making noise. She nodded approval.
It's time to get ready, Elaine said. Moving back from the corner and handing her reins to Birgitta, she tried to embrace the source. It was like trying to catch smoke with her fingers. Frustration and anger welled up, all the things you needed to suppress if you were to channel. She tried again and failed again. Phelan and Marilyn were going to get away, to come this close. They had to be in that lighted room. She knew it, and they were going to escape. Sadness replaced anger, and suddenly Sidar flowed into her. She barely stifled a sigh of relief.
I'll meld the flows, Sarita. Vandine, you meld for Kariana.
I don't understand why we have to link, the Tyran Brown muttered, but she put herself on the edge of embracing the power. With two of them and four of us, we outnumber them, but linked it's two and two.
A clue?
Perhaps she wished it to be three and three. Two strong enough to overwhelm them, even if they're holding the power, Sarita. Elaine reached through her as if she were an Angreal, and the glow of Sidar surrounded the other woman as the link was completed. In truth, it surrounded both of them, but she could only see the part around Sarita until she wove spirit around her. Then the glow vanished. She placed the same weave on herself and prepared four shields and several other weaves, all inverted. She felt almost giddy with excitement, but she did not intend to be caught by surprise. Frustration still pulsed along the bond, but for the rest, Birgitta felt like a drawn arrow. Elaine touched her arm. We will be all right. Birgitta snorted and flung her thick braid back over her shoulder. Keep an eye on Master Hark, Birgitta. It would be a shame if he had to be hanged because he was tempted to run. Hark squeaked. She exchanged glances with Vandine, who said, We might as well be about it. The four of them walked up Full Moon Street slowly, as if out for a stroll, and slipped into the shadow-shrouded stable yard. Elaine opened the kitchen door slowly, but the hinges were well-oiled, emitting not a squeak. The brick-walled kitchen was lit only by a tiny fire in the wide stone fireplace where a kettle hung steaming, yet that was enough for them to cross the floor without bumping into the table or chairs. Someone sighed, and she pressed a warning finger to her lips. Vandine frowned at Kariana, who looked embarrassed and spread her hands. A short hall led to stairs at the front of the house. Gathering her skirts, Elaine started up, silent on slippered feet. She was careful to keep Sarita where she could see her. Vandine was doing the same with Kariana. They could do nothing with the power, but that hardly meant they could do nothing. On the second flight of stairs, she began hearing the murmur of voices. Light spilled from an open door. Don't care what you think, a woman said in that room. You leave the thinking to me and do as you're told. Elaine moved to the door. It was a sitting room, with gilded stand lamps and rich carpets on the floor and a tall fireplace of blue marble, but she had eyes only for the three women in it. Only one, a sharp-faced woman, was seated. That must be Cheyenne. The other two stood with their backs to the door, heads bowed like penitents. The sharp-faced woman's eyes widened when she saw her in the doorway, but Elaine gave her no time to open her mouth. The two black sisters cried out in alarm as shields went onto them, and flows of air bound their arms to their sides, tightened their skirts around their legs. More flows of air fastened Cheyenne to her gilded armchair. Elaine drew Sarita into the room with her and moved to where she could see all of their faces. Sarita tried to step back. She might only have been trying to give her the place of prominence, but Elaine caught her sleeve again, keeping her in view too. Vandine and Kariana joined them. Marilyn's narrow face held Aes Sedai calm, but Phelan snarled silently. "What is the meaning of this?" Cheyenne demanded. "I recognize you. You're Elaine Trekand, the daughter heir, but that gives you no right to invade my home and assault me." "Phelan Boda," Elaine said calmly. "Marilyn Gamalfin, Cheyenne Avarhin, I arrest you as dark friends." Well, her voice was calm. Inside, she wanted to skip with glee, and Birgitta thought this would be dangerous. "That is ridiculous," Cheyenne said in icy tones. "I walk in the light.
Not if you walk with these two, Elaine told her. To my certain knowledge, they've proven themselves Black Aja in Tarvalen, Tyr, and Tanchico. You don't hear them denying it, do you? That's because they know I... Suddenly, sparks danced all over her from head to toe. She twitched helplessly, muscles spasming, Sidar slipping from her grasp. She could see Vandine and Kariana and Saritha jerking as sparks flickered across them as well. Only a moment it lasted, but when the sparks vanished, Elaine felt as if she had been fed through a mangle. She had to hold on to Saritha to stay on her feet, and Saritha clung to her as hard. Vandine and Kariana were supporting one another, swaying, each with her chin on the other's shoulder. Phelan and Marilyn wore startled expressions, but the light of the power enveloped them in heartbeats. Elaine felt the shield fasten onto her, saw them settle on the other three. There was no need for binding. Any of them would have fallen over without support. She would have shouted if she could have, if she thought that Birgitta and the others could do more than die. Four women Elaine recognized entered the room. Asni Zeramine and Tamila Kinderode, Chesmal Emery and Eldrith Jondar. Four black sisters. She could have wept. Saritha groaned softly. "Why did you wait so long?" Asni demanded of Phelan and Marilyn. The Saldaean's dark, tilted eyes were angry. "I used this so they wouldn't feel us embrace Sidar, but why did you just stand there?" She waved a small, bent black rod, perhaps an inch in diameter, that had a strangely dull look. The thing seemed to fascinate her. "A gift from Mogedin, a weapon from the Age of Legends. I can kill a man at 100 paces with this, or just stun him if I want to put him to the question." "I can kill a man if I can see him," Chesmal said scornfully. Tall and handsome, she was the image of icy arrogance. Asni sniffed. "But my target could be surrounded by 100 sisters, and not one would know what killed him." "I suppose it has its uses," Chesmal admitted in grudging tones. "Why did you just stand there?" "They had us shielded," Phelan said bitterly. Eldrith's breath caught, and she put a plump hand to her round cheek. "That's impossible. Unless..." Her dark eyes sharpened. "They've discovered a way to hide the glow, to hide their weaves. Now that would be most useful." "You have my thanks for your timely rescue," Cheyenne said, rising. "But do you have a reason for coming here tonight? Did Moradin send you?" Asni channeled a flow of air that struck Cheyenne's cheek with a loud crack, staggering her. "Keep a civil tongue in your mouth, and perhaps we'll let you leave with us. Or we can leave you behind, dead." Cheyenne's cheek was reddened, but her hands remained at her sides. Her face was expressionless. "Elaine's the only one we need," Tamila said. She was pretty in a fox-faced way, almost a fragile child in appearance despite her ageless face, but her blue eyes held an unhealthy light. She touched her lips with the tip of her tongue. "I'd enjoy playing with the others, but they'd be a burden we don't need." "If you're going to kill them," Marilyn said, as though discussing the price of bread, "spare Kariana. She is one of us." "A gift from Adelius," Vandine murmured, and Kariana's eyes went very wide. Her mouth opened, but no sound came out. The two women sagged and fell to the carpet. Vandine began trying to push herself up, but Kariana lay staring at the ceiling, the hilt of Vandine's belt knife protruding from beneath her breastbone. The glow surrounded Chesmal, and she touched Vandine with a complex weave of fire, earth, and water. The white-haired woman collapsed, as if her bones had melted. The same weave touched Saritha, and she pulled Elaine down atop her as she fell. Saritha's eyes were already glazing. "Their warders will be coming now," Chesmal said. "A little more killing to do." "Run, Birgitta," Elaine thought, wishing the bond could carry words. "Run!"